It's been 20 years today since a small East African country descended into turmoil after the death of its president, and I'm not talking about Rwanda. A year before the genocide in that country, the Hutu president of neighboring Burundi, Melchior Ndadaye, was assassinated. Hutus retaliated by slaughtering thousands of their Tutsi neighbors, perhaps as many as 25,000. A decade later, the United Nations International Commission of Inquiry for Burundi called it a genocide. When the violence began in 1993, Gilbert Tuhabanye was a high school track star dreaming of someday running in the Olympics. But on October 21st of that year, Gilbert and the rest of his Tutsi classmates and teachers were beaten and locked in a burning building and left to die. Gilbert lay beneath the dead bodies of his friends for hours before slipping out a window. He was the only survivor. Today, he is a long-distance runner, motivational speaker, and author of the 2006 memoir, This Voice in My Heart, a genocide survivor's story of escape, faith, and forgiveness. And Gilbert Tuhabanye joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you here, really. You know, I've read your account, and you've had to repeat the story many, many times over the course of the past 20 years, which I have to imagine is painful. Is it still painful to talk about that day?
No, it's not painful, because right now I moved on. It feels good to talk about it just for myself. And that's the only time that the story comes to life to me. Otherwise, I don't think about this anymore. I used to have nightmares, but all those are gone because of running, because also I was able to do a lot of things for myself to move on. But when I talk about it, especially I love your intro, how everybody now remember Rwanda. But people forget the whole violence ignited in Burundi in 1993. So
that was the second genocide in Burundi, in recent memory at least. There was an earlier one in 1972.
Correct.
And I wonder, did you feel growing up, did you feel these tensions? Did you feel as though there was the possibility of violence? Or did this seem to come out of nowhere?
No, you hear, but as a young boy, my dream was just to be the best I can be in sports. Never liked politics. So they would say, you know, 1972, there were a lot of killings. So I'm always looking forward. There's nothing I can do for the past. There was this little tension, but I didn't pay attention. I guess I was ignorant.
But you've been back to your village many times since then.
Yes, I have. 2011, I went back with my family because the children haven't been to Africa. And it was amazing to visit and see what I grew up, visit the school. And I got a chance to go see the memorial, too. I felt that it was a chapter that needed to be closed. And I went, as I'm trying to capture the moment and tell the story, what happened, something hit me hard. I lost my voice. That's really all... the people that I witnessed dying, it started coming to life and I couldn't talk.
How do you explain this to your kids? I mean, it's a horrifying experience that you went through. And not only that, but watching kids that were your friends, that you thought were your friends, a teammate that you'd run with that was then trying to kill you. How do you explain that to your children?
My children are young. The oldest is 12. She read my book, and every time in the morning she would get up and look in my eyes, and she wanted to hug me. Mm-hmm. And one night, after she finished the whole book, she came up to me. She was in tears, and she said, "I am sorry, Dad, that you had to go through this." It really broke my heart. I didn't want her to know, but at one point, you have to. After she read my book, I think she understands really what I get the joy, and she appreciates more having me here in this country and how free we can do whatever we want to do. And she understands really who I am after she read the book.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with genocide survivor Gilbert Tuhabanye as he remembers the day in 1993, 20 years ago, when Burundi's genocide began. I was really interested in your discussion of when you were lying in the hospital and you had burns, especially on your legs, and the doctors told you you wouldn't run again. And then you got the letter, I guess it had been 3 months, the letter from Tulane University offering you a scholarship, but they didn't know what had happened to you, correct?
Correct.
So they didn't know that you might not be able to run. And you must have made a conscious choice that you were going to ignore what the doctors said. What was that like?
People will tell you that I'm crazy. But when I was in hospital, laying down. I couldn't do anything.
It was painful to move.
I couldn't move. I couldn't move because I had a 30-degree burn in my back, 30-degree burn on the whole right side. And there was no place to lay on it. And it was a struggle, trying to understand, trying to heal, emotional and physical, because I was betrayed by my classmate, betrayed by my headmaster. It was really too hard to understand how these horrible things can happen to me as an innocent civilian. The president is killed and these people want to kill me. And everything was so quick. 3 months just being in a hospital, I was getting 3 shots a day, those antibiotics. They were just put in a quad. And it was so
your quad,
painful.
You're talking about your quadriceps, the muscles on the front of your leg.
Yeah, correct. And the thing about it is runner. That was the hardest muscle. Yeah. It was so painful. And I received this letter. A letter invited me to run on a full scholarship for Tulane University. But before all these things happened, I was well ranked in the national. I was good in 800 and 400. So when I received this letter, it was a message of hope. I remember going crazy. I'm like, wait a minute. Someone out there thinks that I can do it. Maybe let me try. A friend of mine, at the same time, came on a bicycle. I lied to him. I said, hey, sir, go talk to the doctor. He wants to talk to you. And I jumped on a bicycle. I couldn't stretch my leg. There was between the knee.
Yeah, the scar tissue was hard, probably.
I could not stretch my leg for 3 months. It was bent. It's like in a joint.
Yeah.
So I had to stretch that joint and right here and outside the knee. And from that moment, I cannot tell you how great that I felt. Because from that moment, I was able to start jogging, start walking. And then here again, the joy.
Wasn't it painful?
It was painful, but it was snap. And from that point, I felt great because I started doing therapy. It took me a year, full year. And you have to be patient. Yeah, it took me a whole year to get back to where I was, to start training and start slowly jogging. Because running for me, it's my therapy. It's my freedom. And to be able to start running, that was the day that everything started happening.
Help me understand. I'm not a runner. And in fact, when I do run, that's when my mind starts spinning its wheels, right? It's going crazy because it has nothing else to do. So help me understand, what exactly does running do for you? I mean, you describe it in the book as how you found forgiveness for people who'd done this to you. Help me understand how that works.
You know, running for me has brought joy. When I run, my mind is clear. It's free. People run with music. I don't run with music. I sing while I run. And because of running, I was able to clear my mind and move on. Instead of thinking about go kill other people that to kill me, because of running, I was able to forgive and move on. It was not easy, but running helped me to move on in my life. I never seen a doctor. Most people suggested I should go see a therapist because of what happened. But I never think about going back to kill other people. It's just a forgiveness. It's huge. It's powerful for me.
And in fact, you've started a foundation a charitable foundation that has so far brought clean water to over 20,000 people in Burundi. I mean, I assume that's also therapeutic for you.
It is, especially, I don't know about you, I feel great when I help someone. It's a huge sense of accomplishment for me and also for the foundation to be able to help more than 20,000 getting clean water.
Including Hutus.
Yes, there's no tribal specific. When we give water to the needy people.
So it's been 20 years, and actually you're using running as a way to mark the occasion as well. And I understand that you've invited other people to run with you, and you've promised you won't go too fast.
Correct. I'm running 20 miles. And this 20 miles is to celebrate life. What these 20 years has been, people will be helping me, you know, motivate me, inspire me along the way. I'm doing a 20 mile just to remember the journey of a triumph, the journey of faith, the journey of courage, the forgiveness. And dear friends, always forgive your enemy, forgive your friends, forgive your family, and move on.
Gilbert Touhabanye, running coach, genocide survivor, philanthropist, writer, and motivational speaker, kind enough to join us here in our studios in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much. It's really a privilege.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coming up, one in three women in the U.S. will be a victim of some form of domestic violence in their lifetime. But is prosecuting batterers the best way to help?
We have to really have an individual approach to the cases instead of a one-size-fits-all approach.
We'll go behind closed doors to hear from two people who are working to change the conversation around domestic violence. That's ahead on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Celeste Headlee.